the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hi there, how are you all? Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast brought to you by Kraken. I'm your host Peter McCormack, and today I've got a double interview with Amin Soleimani and Ali Eve Knox from SpankChain, looking at the issues faced by sex workers and how cryptocurrencies can help. But before that, I've got a message from my show sponsors, and I just want to say a big thank you to all of them for supporting this show. There are many important issues covered here, so if you usually skip the intro, then please do check out my intro comments after the ads, because there's a few points I wanted to make before you actually listen to the interview. Anyway, on to my amazing sponsors. So first up, Kraken. They made a big announcement this week regarding security, and this is one of the reasons I love Kraken so much, the way they approach so many different things. For me, they are without doubt the cryptocurrency market leader in security. They've made it their number one priority above anything else that they want to protect their clients. Their chief security officer at Kraken, Nick Pococo, has written an open letter which is available on the Kraken blog, where they point out a few things they're working on. So firstly, they've enhanced their two-factor authentication by enforcing it on login, making security core to all Kraken user accounts. And also, a very cool thing they've done is they have launched Kraken Security Labs, which is their commitment to improving the security of the entire cryptocurrency ecosystem by performing vulnerability research against third-party products such as hardware wallets, software wallets, and other related technology. And they're going to disclose identified issues in a way that does not jeopardize the security of the industry but improve the security for everyone. I've taken this straight from their blog. I think this is super cool. I love the way they do these things. It's such a Kraken thing to do, to be looking at the whole industry, not just themselves. And we know security is so important with all the hacks that have happened. So this is great. Nick himself has a two-decade history as an active member of the security industry. I'm going to definitely get him on at some point onto the podcast, because I think it would be really interesting to do a deep dive into security across cryptocurrencies. So yeah, keep an eye out for that. If you want to join me in supporting Kraken, the best crypto exchange in the world, head over to kraken.com, which is kraken.com. Also, let's talk about BlockFi. And I've run some ads for the last 2 weeks with regards to their interest accounts, because there's been a lot of questions about it, a lot of debate. Some people aren't happy with it. And Zach, their CEO, and I have a very good and open relationship. We talk regularly. You know, Zach's aware that people have been questioning me about the sponsorship. So he said to me, come on, Pete, let's just open up the floor. If people have got questions, they can send them to you. We'll do an open session. I can ask him all those questions. He'll answer, and we'll record that and put that up on SoundCloud for people to listen to. I've already had, I think, about 8 emails with various questions coming in. So that's super cool. We are listening. If you do have questions for Zach, please fire them over to me on my email, which is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. And I'll be recording that with Zach next week and putting it up for you to all listen to. That's hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Yeah, fire over your questions and I'll get them to Zach. So on to the two interviews I recorded with Amin and Ali. And they've already received a bunch of criticism before being released, and I think it's for a couple of reasons. Firstly, people think I'm becoming a shitcoiner, and also they think SpankChain is a scam. So let me just give a bit of a background. I was in Venice having a few days off when I had been traveling around the world doing various interviews, and I got up one morning and I read an article on Decrypt about a journalist who had visited SpankChain and was discussing the various issues faced by sex workers. And as it said in the article that SpankChain was in Venice, I reached out to Amin and said, look, these are important subjects, I'd love to come and talk to you about them. And within an hour, we were recording because he was about to leave town. So listen, let me just say, firstly, I am not promoting SpankChain here. I'm not validating the business. I'm not legitimizing them. I don't know enough about it. I didn't have enough time before to research it, but I certainly was aware that Amin had a deep knowledge of the industry, of how sex workers have been deplatformed by the likes of PayPal and Coinbase. They can't get bank accounts, etc. And it is a perfect kind of fit with crypto. And so I just wanted to talk to Amin about this, find out what's happening, how SpankChain are approaching this. Now, I know a lot of people will just say, well, why don't they just use Bitcoin and SpankChain is a scam ICO, etc. But even Bitcoin has issues for sex workers, one of the main ones being volatility, an issue also faced if using Ethereum. Anyway, listen, there are so many issues with the industry, such as fees being taken by cam sites being at like 50%, chargebacks, etc. And these were things I knew I just wanted to get into and wanted to find out more about. And following the interview with Amin, I then traveled to Austin and met up with Ali, who herself is an adult sex worker, but also works for SpankChain. I wanted to find out directly from her the issues that sex workers face, and not just with being paid, also actually the issues they actually face being in the industry. It's a topic I don't know enough about, so I wanted to cover that as well. So listen, I can't validate the SpankChain tech. I've read different things from them being scammers to working on some of the most interesting and advanced Ethereum solutions. To be honest, this isn't the point of the interview. I just wanted to learn more about the underbelly of the industry and share this out with my audience, as I know there's probably a high chance that some of you consume porn, whether or not you want to admit it, and there are issues faced by sex workers I think we should be aware of. So listen, as ever, Feedback is always welcome. In terms of ordering, first up you're going to hear from Ali, as I wanted to focus on the issues faced by sex workers first, and then you'll hear from Amin, as I wanted to ask him similar questions but also ask him how he's trying to solve this. Anyway, listen, I hope you enjoy it. Feedback welcome, as I said. And just a couple of other things. Lightning Month starts next week. Looking forward to getting some of these interviews out. Got some great ones coming up. And also, if you join the podcast, you want to support what I do, head over to my website, which is whatbitcoindid.com. Click on the support section. And yeah, hope you enjoy the interview. Any questions, feel free to reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Ali, hello, how are you?
Doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Had a nice feed. Thank you for bringing me out here to Salt Lick. Is this a famous place?
It's so great. It's like one of the best barbecue places in the world.
I told you last time I was here in Austin, I was a vegan and I was getting taken to all these barbecue places and having jalapenos and a bit of bread. So
bit of a change this time.
Bit of a change. So listen, thank you for agreeing to see me.
Absolutely.
And I obviously met with Amin out in Venice, and I'm not a huge Ethereum person, but I'm very interested in how Bitcoin and crypto can help sex workers, people who have been censored and blocked by various payment channels.
Yep.
So before we start talking about the industry, and can you just tell me what Bitcoin means for you and what it's enabled you to do?
Sure. I started taking Bitcoin in 2014 for Skypes. It was a different payment source because I had all my payment apps shut down. So I had my Cash App, my Google Pay, my PayPal, everything you could name. I had it shut down because I violated the terms of service by using it for sex work. It's kind of funny because the thing that I got shut down from PayPal is somebody was just giving me a tribute, which was, you know, they were paying their money to me or whatever, and got it shut down that way. So it wasn't like I was escorting or doing anything that was against the law, but PayPal didn't like it, kept my money, shut my account, whatever. So I was looking for another way to take some cash. So I had heard about Bitcoin earlier, probably in 2013 or so. I had had an argument with the guy I was seeing at the time, and he said, we have to get into Bitcoin. Like, we have to do this. And I was like, okay, we should get it, and we should, you know, sell some drugs or some sex or something that people want, you know, this alternative payment for all these things that, you know, can't use it for. And he was like, no, we have to go mainstream. Well, turns out we're both right. Okay. So I started taking it in 2014. For payment for Skypes, held a bunch, sold it in 2017 in December, and bought a house.
Good timing.
Yeah, it was really great. I'm kind of kicking myself because I sold it like 19 grand instead of 21, but you know.
Oh, come on. You've beaten everyone.
It's one of those, though. It's one of those things where I like, I could have had it.
Well, I think I sold some all the way down at about 8,000.
Yeah.
So I think you've done all right there. That's not bad.
I've done all right. In Ethereum this last year, I've lost like 60% of my paycheck, which is a real fucking bummer, but I know.
Well,
I know.
Look, the thing is that the really interesting thing there is that Bitcoin has enabled you to work, right? You're not doing
Absolutely. Changed my life for sure.
But you're working in an industry that's considered legal.
I am.
And you are working in an industry whereby you won't be arrested for what you're doing, yet you are censored by the payment processors.
Yeah.
Are you censored by the banks?
Absolutely. I've had my bank account shut down, my P.O. box shut down, my Amazon wish list.
Right.
Yeah, you name it.
And
again, all legal work.
All legal work. But at the same time, we should probably also recognize that there are going to be... I'm going to put this to gender. There are going to be women out there working in prostitution.
Absolutely.
Who, whatever moral judgment we make, I have no problem with somebody earning money how they want, but they are also, whilst it may be deemed illegal, there's certain conversations about decriminalization. People still need to be able to earn a living. So
absolutely.
It affects everyone.
Yeah, and I'm not passing judgment on them whatsoever. I'm just making it clear that I do legal work, so it's even more of a problem when I get my thing shut down, because it's like, well, I'm just doing things that some people don't like. It's not like I'm doing anything that's harming anyone or anything like that.
Is this an industry-wide problem, or is this a problem for sex workers, but maybe not for the maybe largest sex companies? Or is it industry-wide?
Oh, no. They get screwed, too.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I shot a scene once, and I got my check, and I went to put it in the bank, and by the time they had written the check to the time I put it in the bank, which was, I don't know, 3 hours or so, they'd had their account shut down. So I had to go back and get another check from whenever they were able to open their new bank account, and they were just a regular porn company. But banks don't like it.
Right.
Yeah.
And you have a belief that the people who are making the decisions to close this down and then going home and consuming pornography.
Yes, I do. Actually, one of the people that I got a lot of Bitcoins was from a financial advisor, and he was strictly working for a company that shut down one of my accounts, but he would come and do his dirty work with me and pay me on the side. Yeah.
Are there any debates around this? Is anybody discussing this? Are there any financial institutions who are appearing a little bit more open-minded or liberal?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, somebody recently was talking about making their own coin. Facebook's pulling in some their own coin right now too. So I think it's gonna, and which is great in my opinion, which is great because it's gonna have this mainstream adoption, and that's what we all want, right?
All right.
We all want everybody to use it. Is it gonna work? I don't know. Is it gonna take some time? Probably. Is the government eventually gonna get their hands in it? Probably. Until then, I'm just gonna keep on rolling and keep on accepting it.
All right, and also, how widespread is the understanding and knowledge of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies in the industry? Do a lot of people you're speaking to understand it, or is it still relatively new?
Super new. Okay. People are still like, you know, this is scammy, this is strange. The price volatility is a fucking problem, especially when, on our side, it's a little bit different because we have a stable coin now. Yep. So, you know, you're paid out the same amount. But prior to this, we didn't. So some models would be paid. And by the time they'd get off of their shift, it had already been a different price, which was very problematic for people who were just getting into this and trusting us. And they were like, oh, this is weird. I went to check my account. It's a completely different number. Well, like, this is how this works.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's still new. It's a problem for us to find people that are willing to part with their crypto currently, which is a big deal for when I'm showing my tits and you don't want to part with your crypto. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. What kind of education job needs doing for the industry? And are there aha moments for some sex workers where you've shown them something and they're like, oh, okay, this makes sense?
Yeah, for sure. We have like a I don't know if Amin told you about our onboarding tool, which is Crypto Titties.
I'm aware of it.
Yeah. So that was a really good onboarding. It brought a lot of people in. It got us a lot of attention. It's kind of fun. You literally put your picture of your tits up and people go and tip you. We have every single gender on there. We don't discriminate for anything. Anybody wants to apply to our site, they have to, you know, put their ID in and everything like that because they have to verify that they're of age. So we are, you know, we have to verify your identity to still be in the legal ramifications and everything like that. So. Yep. You know, you can't be completely anonymous, but that's how any campsite, anything that you're going to be potentially, I mean, I probably even Twitch is that way. I don't know. Anything where you could potentially show any type of sexual content, you're going to have to identify. So that's a problem, but it's also, you know, keeps us safe and keeps others safe. And it's how we run a really good platform. Anyway, so you can, once you are approved through that and you give us your identification, you can go up on Crypto Titties and the people can start tipping you. Well, when you start getting tips and you start getting that money, well, people want to learn about it. They want to learn how to flip it or how to cash it out. I mean, once you're given that money, you're going to learn stuff. So that's kind of the tool that we've taken. There's probably some other stuff out there. I know there's some cam people that get on and they'll talk about crypto and stuff like that, but it's still so new.
Right. Have you experienced any problems offboarding from Bitcoin into dollars?
I had my Coinbase shut down, if that's what you mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
For the same reasons?
I did a show on Showtime called Darknet where I talked about using Bitcoin for sex work. And I was showing my QR code to the camera so people can send me money through the camera because, you know, you can just scan it like that. And Coinbase didn't like it. I had violated their terms. So they shut my ass down and then blocked me. So that was problematic. I just shifted around to a new place and I now use a place that doesn't have sex work in their terms.
Okay.
It's my problem. I violate terms.
Right. Okay.
I shouldn't be using it for what I am. But again, I'm legal, all those things. It's how do they differentiate between that and I'm not human trafficking or I'm not using it for escorting? They don't. So I don't get upset when those kinds of things happen. It's a fucking bummer because it's my money or whatever. But I get it.
So we're dealing with corporate moral judgment.
For sure.
Okay.
Absolutely. But there's also some the reasoning behind this. I mean, there is some human trafficking that goes on. There is escorting that goes on. There are things that are illegal that happen and that can't happen in those kinds of transactions. Like, I get it.
But I imagine the more you censor this, the more you push it on the ground, the harder you make it for people, that probably increases the risk. For example, I support the legalization of prostitution because my belief is a
decriminalization.
Sorry. I don't think I have a problem with legalization, because I think a regulated industry would probably be a safer industry for people to work in. Does that make sense?
I see what you're saying. I don't necessarily agree, because okay. I don't know that I want the government to regulate my business. Okay. But that's what they're doing anyway. Right. We, as sex workers, say decriminalization.
Okay.
It's a bit safer for us. I can't really speak to this completely because I'm not super knowledgeable in this. There's a lot of people that are way more knowledgeable than this. But anyway, continue.
Well, no, but it's useful for me to hear that.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons I wanted to meet you, because I want to learn about this industry. Yeah. You know, when I met Amin, he said 70% of people consume pornography. You think it's higher. I suspect it is higher.
Yeah.
It's taboo. People don't want to talk about it unless they're with maybe one or two buddies. And as such, it seems to have a grey cloud over it when it's probably one of the largest industries in the world. And so there's things I want to learn about it. So what would help me is, can you just give me a background as to how you first came into the industry and the various roles and things you've done?
Yeah, totally. Started in 2014. I graduated from grad school. I was like $100,000 in debt from going to college for 8 years and collecting degrees. So I was working in a job that I went to grad school for, and was making hardly any money. I had gone through a divorce. I had taken a huge hit in my divorce. I support my brother. I have an expensive lifestyle that I've become accustomed to, and my job wasn't cutting it. So we'll say a decade ago, I had posed for Playboy, and I had worked for them with years, and they treated me like a queen.
Okay.
Playboy is and was the ultimate. They are very structured. They're very... They have every single thing together. Every single thing is buttoned up. They're wonderful. They're great to their girls. Love them. Anyway.
I
have a couple times. Yeah. So loved Playboy. And I knew that from posing and being around this type of interaction with men, I could make a living off of it. So I started camming on Playboy. They had a site at the time. I started camming, and my first night I made like $600 or something. And I remember I just showed my tits, and I didn't even talk at the time. I just like typed.
One evening.
It was after I got off work. And it was so great because like at the time I was sitting in traffic all the time. You know, I worked for these people who didn't even really like me. I worked a lot. And it just wasn't making any money. Life just fucking sucked.
Okay.
And this is what I had gone to grad school for. So like, what is happening? I just spent 8 years of my life and a lot of money to have this shitty lifestyle. So anyway, started camming and made a lot of money and was like, oh shit, this is great. So in the fall, maybe winter that year, I decided I'm going to shoot some porn. I need it for marketing. I can get my name out there and maybe this will be kind of fun.
Okay, but I don't imagine it was a rash decision.
I'm a thinker, first of all, and I, you know, do my pros and cons list, and I knew that once it was out there, it was going to be out there forever. I knew all the stigmas that came with it. I knew all the shitty things. I knew all the wonderful things. I had gone and researched a bunch of stuff. I had read blogs. I had gone into, there's this site that like tells cam girls and cam models like how to cam. How to do this. And it was lots of tips from people that have been in the business forever. So I researched the shit out of it.
Did you discuss it with your family at all?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I didn't. So, and they had known that I had done Playboy and stuff like that. And at the time, they knew I was camming.
Okay.
My family's all very cool, so it was never really a problem. So then I started shooting porn. I shot boy girl porn for probably like 8 months or so. And then I had an injury. So I decided, you know, this isn't really for me. I don't really want to do this. I was flying back and forth from Texas, and I was still camming on the side. And I had gone through a round of porn, and I sat down with somebody that was in the industry forever. And he said, listen, he gave me a whole bunch of advice. And he said, you have to own your own content. You have to do all of the things. You have to cam. You have to make clips. You have to get on the phone sex. Like, you have to do every single thing if you want to have some longevity. So I did.
Okay. So a bit like, I've got to be on iTunes, Apple, SoundCloud,
yeah.
YouTube. I've got to have a website. I've got to be in Twitter. Uh-huh. I've got to market in social.
Yeah.
Pretty similar.
You got to hustle. Yeah. I mean, in the days of Jenna Jameson, she was pulling in so much money from porn, but like those days are done.
She was also crossover into, didn't she make, she actually made films as well, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But that was a different time. You know, they can make $30,000 on a film.
Right. Okay.
Shit, you make your rate now.
Well, what's your rate?
You're lucky if you hit your rate. I mean, my rate when I was shooting Boy Girl was $1,600. I don't know anybody that makes $1,600
for one scene.
Yeah.
Okay. And how long on average is a scene? Or how long are you?
You're probably there for like 5 hours because you got to do hair and makeup. Then you got to go through all the consent paperwork, all that stuff. And then you shoot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Let me go back a step. So sure. You're preparing for your first adult scene.
Okay.
Are there any licenses you have to get? Any regulatory processes you have to go through?
You have to test. So you have to make sure that you do not have any STIs or anything like that.
Okay.
You have no HIV. So it's a blood test and a urine test. And then I had an agent at the time, and that's kind of why I stopped shooting also, is like I didn't have the agent allowed me to be in some unsafe positions.
Okay.
And so I didn't want to shoot with him anymore. So I actually stopped shooting for a period of time so I could get out of my contract.
When you're preparing for your first scene and you're going into the industry, are there any support networks for people to introduce them, to prepare them for what's going to happen, or prepare them for maybe any emotional difficulty they go through
sure.
with it?
At the time, I did not know any of any. I don't know if there are some that exist. There are now. And they're run mostly on donation. I don't even know like how they get their funding other than corporations that give money to them. There's one that does mental health. There's a group of ladies in Portland and in Vegas. They're called the Cupcake Girls. And they offer a bunch of different services for free for sex workers. I mean, financial stuff, legal stuff, health stuff, tons of info. I didn't know about them at the time. I know about them now from being in the industry and doing some fundraisers for them and that stuff like that. But at the time, I had only known what the internet had told me. And so I had research, which is probably 500 times more than most people that got into the industry. Yeah.
I guess one of the things that I would worry about, and I talked to you about this beforehand, is I guess the legal age of consent for this is 18.
Yeah.
And I would worry that there maybe are some young girls who, out of whatever reasoning they have, can maybe be introduced to some intimidating or quite aggressive requirements early on and maybe don't have the, I don't know, maybe don't have the confidence to protect themselves.
Yes.
Is this a common problem?
Absolutely. I can't imagine, and I'm pretty with it. You know, I don't do drugs and I'm show up on time and I'm pretty financially stable and smart about it. But I can't imagine being 18 and not, because when I was 18, I wasn't, and I'm pretty with it. I can't imagine needing sex work when you're 18. I mean, I came into it a lot older too. I was in my late 20s. And so I had a lot of life experience. I had a lot of sense. I had a plan. But I can't imagine not. It's certainly an industry where you can be eaten up and spit out very, very easily. Also, replaced. I mean, I remember my agent told me once, and this sticks with me. This is like one of the quotes that it's one of those like eye-opening moments. And it was, every single day, another girl turns 18.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is there...
And that was like he was proud of that because he was going to get the girl when she turned 18. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was just like this cycle. But that's a real thing, because if you don't perform the thing and you don't meet the rate and you don't show up on time, or if you're shitty to work with, someone's going to replace you and then that's it.
And I guess one thing I find quite strange there is that you, at the age of 18, you can legally be a sex worker in the adult industry, mm-hmm. and you can make hardcore pornography, but you are not old enough to go into a bar and drink a whiskey.
Yep.
And I find that kind of confusing.
Yep, kind of confusing, for sure.
If anything, it should be the other way around? Or it should be some maybe parity?
I don't know. I mean, maybe there are some 18-year-olds that are, like, prepared for this, but, like, in my late 20s, I wasn't. I know when I got into it, after all the research and all the talking to people, every single thing I had done, I got into it and was like, what the fuck? Like, this is nuts. I didn't know about this and this and that and this and...
So what are the things that you didn't know about that I or anyone else listening wouldn't know about or be aware of? What are some of the things that, you know, that go on that we don't know about?
Okay. I mean, it sounds like no big deal, but it's stuff like, so I didn't live there, so I would fly there and I would book up a bunch of scenes. Well, I didn't know that some scenes would get canceled, or some scenes you'd get replaced, or some scenes didn't even really exist because your agent fucking sucks. And they just wanted to get you out there just to shoot, because they may get you out there one time. So they're going to try to shoot you up and get as much money as they from you as you possibly can, because you may go home hating this and you never come back. And that happens a lot. So I get there. I stay in a model house, which you pay for, which is no big deal because you'd pay for a hotel or anything like that. But like the model house I was in was fucking cray. Like the girl that ran it was just a drug addict, absolutely nuts. She was constantly doing unsafe stuff with the girls who were there. And here I am, you know, away from home, in a different state, alone. Some of the scenes I had shot, you know, they don't pay for 2 weeks. You have to go to set. You have to pay for all your, you know, all your lingerie and all your shoes, all your shit like that. You have to test. So you're out of pocket that money before you can even get paid. Well, you maybe got getting paid for 2 weeks. Well, that's a fucking problem when you're 18 years old and, you know, you got one paycheck and you fucking blew it on clothes or whatever for your next scene. Like,
so there's a lot of opportunity for people to be exploited.
For sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Is there anything that can be done about that? Do you have thoughts on this?
Probably. In my opinion, I think there needs to be, and maybe this is a thing that is happened or is happening or will happen, but it would have been nice for me to have conversations with people in the business about the business before I got into the business. I had read stuff online or anything like that, but some sort of like mentorship or some sort of like how to do this. That would have been incredibly helpful. It may exist. I don't know about it. I think another thing is sometimes agents or production companies or directors, like they're just, some of them are shitty. Some of them don't care about the well-being. They only want the money. And there's some things that shouldn't happen that happen. It's rare, but it does. And people don't speak out against it because they need their paycheck. So, like, I shot a scene once, and I was in fucking pain. I got injured, and it was actually the last boy-girl scene that I ever shot. I got injured, and I remember the director kept saying, we have to have 2 minutes without a cut, so you have to keep filming. And I was like, listen, like, homie, I can't. Like, I'm bleeding. Like, this is a fucking problem. I can't do this. And he was just like, no, you're not getting paid until you finish the scene.
Right.
And that's a problem. That's a problem. Of course. That's super unsafe. And those kinds of things happen all the time. Well, I've never talked about it. I've never said the company. I've never said the director. Like, I don't say those kinds of things because I want to get booked. Well, that's even creates more problems. So what is a solution is maybe coming forward and saying things and people being taken seriously. But, I don't know.
But the industry does have some quite tough regulations. Are they self-imposed regulations or are they enforced by the law? For example, there's the two-week testing program. Is that legal or is that an industry-wide?
I'm certain that's industry-wide.
Okay. Does the industry have its own set of guidelines or rules? And does it have its own organization that oversees it?
They have some volunteer organizations and they're essentially like kind of unions or things that speak out. There's the Free Speech Coalition, which speaks out on behalf of performers, and they do a lot of the legal litigation and stuff like that. Those people are there. They can't protect you. They can offer some help if you need things. They can offer resources and stuff like that. But they're not making rules that people are following. They have like a consent checklist, which they got together, where people can fill out the consent checklist. So if any of your boundaries are crossed, then what? I don't know. Well, I don't know what happens then.
I guess it's what I'm thinking about here is if somebody's become injured and they are being pressured or forced into doing something, continuing they don't want, I'm struggling to understand the difference between that and abuse.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Can you talk about that? Or do you have a view on that?
No, that stuff is abuse.
Okay.
I mean, there's nobody regulating it other than the few people that come out and will say something. I mean, you mentioned the performer earlier, and I told you that he, you know, some performers had come out. Homeboy's still shooting.
Yeah. I mentioned to you that I watched a documentary where a clinic is being run by an ex-porn star, and she runs the clinic for sexual health, and she said very regularly dealing with people coming in with injuries. And what that's made me think about is that there are real consequences behind the scenes of this industry, and that people aren't aware of maybe this. Or so, are there things that people who consume pornography should be aware of and should care about? Because I think in any other industry, so for example, I'll give you a couple examples. It's a legal industry, right? So there have been scandals related to, say, gymnasts for Olympics, where they've been pressured and abused and dealt with in a very terrible way in trying to get the best out of them to be a performer. That, as a society, we look on that and we go, that is absolutely terrible. We have the same people who may watch gymnasts at the Olympics who also watch pornography, who don't seem to care about the people who are maybe working on camera. So I know you're going to say yes, but people should care, right?
Yeah, for sure. It's one of those things where if someone was to get injured on the job or, you know, to be taken advantage of or abused or whatever, a lot of people are going to say, well, she was just a whore. What did she expect getting into the porn industry? That shouldn't be the case. And I blame it on lots of things like, and I'll probably never work for their company again, and I usually don't because fuck those assholes. But MindGeek, in my opinion, completely ruined everything. They put all the porn up. They allow people to steal all the porn and put it up. And now people aren't paying. So now I'll say primarily girls, but men too, they're shooting scenes for less because the production companies have less. So now they're having to do things that they wouldn't necessarily do because they got the fucking rent to pay. That's super problematic. So one thing that we as consumers can do is not pay, you know, don't go to fucking Pornhub. Like, know that that stuff is stolen. Know that that stuff's not supposed
to
be
stolen.
There. There's the majority of it. Some companies have resorted to, like, they'll put a smaller cut down scene on there and to drive traffic.
Uh-huh.
Well,
like
I fucking refuse, like a trailer. I fucking refuse because I, first of all, I don't want consumers. I don't want this clientele that's going to go and get free porn. I want people that are going to pay me money. Hello.
But a trailer's unfair, really, because I guess the way people consume pornography, you can survive on trailers.
Absolutely.
You don't need to see the
obviously.
Whole movie. Yeah, okay.
I mean, if you're putting 12 minutes up of a 30-minute scene, well, 12 minutes, what's an hour wank? Like 5 minutes?
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know. So what's quite interesting there is when I release my podcast at the start, I always say to people, please listen to the adverts because it's the adverts that pay for me to do this. And I also, when people will go on YouTube and they'll put the timestamp of where the ads finish, and I always comment and say, no, don't do this because without the advertisers, I can't do this. So you can't have free content. Therefore, I don't see any difference between this situation and that because it's creating undue pressure on the
for sure. So porn doesn't have a lot of advertisements.
Nope.
You know, they'll have those dick pills or whatever like that. But like, there's so many companies that won't put their hands on this, and so that's another problem. Is now companies have to make money where they can.
So, a product that we know is consumed by over 70% of people is struggling because society hasn't accepted it. Yeah, it's still too taboo.
Yeah, for sure.
So we need to open
And I can easily go to Pornhub right now and watch, and that's fine. You know, they don't have to come by my videos. They don't have to support me in any way. They can just go and, you know, buy a rip.
So a MindGeek hated by the industry, or are they seen as a necessary evil?
Both,
right.
Unfortunately. I mean, they came through and they bought up a bunch of studios. They, the one company that I actually do shoot for them, they treat me very fucking well.
Okay.
That's the unfortunate part of this business.
So explain to me the best companies you work with. What do they do differently? How do they treat their performers better?
The best companies that I work with treat us, they consider us artists.
Okay.
So first of all, even just having that difference, rather than a performer, an artist, someone that's coming in creating content. So I'm not just performing, I also create stuff. I also edit stuff. There's a lot that goes behind this process. So even considering, you know, us as, it steps up our professionalism, which is a huge thing. And then we're, you know, sometimes even taken more seriously. People like you get us on podcasts, and we're doing mainstream stuff. We're talking about how to fix this, how we can, you know, bridge the gap between different industries. Those kinds of things are super important.
Is there a problem with drugs in the industry?
I think there's a problem with drugs in any industry.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I think the difference here is I would worry that people who have a drug problem have a very quick way to quick money if they're willing to lower their standards or do things they wouldn't want to do.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas if I would say was addicted to drugs, I can't suddenly go out and do some low value podcasts and make some money.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, is this monitored at all? Are there any support networks for sex workers who are addicted to drugs?
Probably, like I was saying with those charities, there's probably some resources that they have. I don't know about any of them, but I also never needed anything and had to look into anything. So it's not widely known, I'll say that.
All right, okay. So what I'm really taking from this interview is that there's a couple of main issues. Firstly, that, I mean, I don't want to say regulated, but it feels like regulations would be very helpful for the industry to have a set of standards to work by, and knowing that if those standards are, and a line is crossed, that people could be up for criminal charge. Because most there are a lot of industries whereby if you could be injured and you're at fault for that, you can be held criminally liable. And it feels like the industry needs this.
Some sort of regulation. I don't necessarily know if it's government or if it's industry-wide. I think that there's a lot of people that have, you know, consent checklist or a code of conduct that you have to follow. And when people don't, that needs to be known. People need to know that. Somebody shouldn't have 12 people have to come forward before we know that this person sucks to work with, you know?
It doesn't need to be based on unsaid reputations or undiscussed reputations. Mm-hmm. That's a shame.
Yeah.
And then obviously the second issue, because we've discussed it, is financial censorship, which is a real problem.
Yeah.
And so what do you think can be done there? How can people help the industry? What do people need to be aware of?
Help the industry would be pay for your content. If you are into a performer or a model or, you know, a content maker, buy their stuff, support them, because they have bills to pay. And if you don't, we're not going to make it. I mean, that's the way for me to go away, is to stop fucking paying me. You know what I mean?
Well, to go away in terms of
complaining. But I'm offering a service that people want.
Yeah.
So I'm very lucky that I work in the fetish world to where it's a fetish that people pay me. So my clientele is real inclined to do that.
Yeah. So it feels like that is a bit of a safer area of the industry.
Absolutely.
Because you have a lot more control over the relationship with the people you have. But not everyone can get to that point.
That's true.
And that fetish is a specific taste. Whilst that can solve problems for individuals, it's not an industry-wide solution.
For sure. Yeah, my industry solution was I changed my business model to where I was in control all the time. A lot of people can't do that.
Right, okay.
For sure.
Okay, so if people wanted to learn more about this, like, where would you recommend they go? What, beyond, obviously, paying for content, is there any other action that can be taken? Is there anything else you would like to see happen?
I think just not being a dick.
Okay.
Not going on Twitter and getting in a fight with people. I mean, come on. Like, it's just crazy when, if I put out a photo, people will come and comment about your tits being out or you being a whore or whatever. Like, just don't, like, what? Who go? I don't know. I block a lot of people on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
A lot. Probably half of my followers. I vet every single person that follows me. I go to them to see if they're being an asshole, because it's typically what it is. If you're a troll to one, you're going to be a troll to a whole bunch. And so I block them. I don't interact with trolls, so I don't get it a lot. But there's people that get hate all the fucking time. And if people weren't so awful to each other, this whole thing's going to be better.
It's quite interesting that you're not censored on Twitter for sharing. I mean,
well, yeah, so we are, because I have to mark my stuff 18 plus. So a lot of people won't even see my stuff.
Okay, which is fine.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Very easy to register an 18 plus account. I obviously did my research last night. I Googled you. I've seen your work. I've seen your Twitter. I've seen you naked, you know, and I've seen that on Twitter. Okay. Now, you are not being censored by Twitter for uploading naked photos, which ultimately will lead to more traffic for Twitter. But you are being censored by Cash App for receiving payments. So it feels like there's a certain amount of hypocrisy there. And actually, strangely, the payments just sit in the background. Nobody really knows about that. If anything, I don't agree with it, but I would understand, or I could see their thought process for censoring the content, because, you know, my son can have a Twitter account.
Yeah, and I don't want, I mean, to be very clear, I don't want people under 18 seeing my content. First of all, they can't pay me, so fuck them. I don't want them to see me. Second of all, it's just fucking weird.
I don't know. He's nearly 15 now. They have money these days. They have cars, they have a web. Hey, they have crypto. Crypto can't stop them.
Really? He didn't have to, like, KYC onto a exchange that he was of age?
If my son doesn't have crypto, by the way, but... If I turn around to my son and went, you know, here's a wallet, here's some Bitcoin,
uh-huh,
I guess we have a problem there that I've just thought of right now, not really thought through.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's a slightly different thing.
That's problematic.
But that then comes down to my job as a parent, I guess. That's
I guess.
Different. Okay, so this has been amazing. Thank you.
Absolutely.
I think it's really important to get this out there. I've got a feeling some of my audience might reject this or might be kind of like, why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think it's an important issue. I'm really glad to talk to you about it.
Absolutely.
I'm glad you've been candid. Mm-hmm. Thank you for lunch. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pay you in Bitcoin. But no, also, thank you. If people want to talk to you or ask mm-hmm. you about this, is there any way they can get in touch?
Yeah, you can go to my website, AllieKnox.com, or you can follow me on Twitter, AllieEveKnox. You can buy my content through any of my links.
Okay, amazing. Yeah. Well, listen, good luck with everything you
thank
do.
You.
And I think we'll probably end up doing this again in the future.
Cool.
All right, take care.
Thanks.
Next up, I have the interview with Amin, talking about the issues faced by sex workers and how crypto can help solve these problems. But before that, I've got a message from my show sponsors. Last time I'm going to mention this about BlockFi and their new announcement that they have launched crypto interest accounts and that there's been a whole load of debate around this online. As I've been saying for the last few interviews, the floor is open. I've been speaking with the CEO, Zach Prince. We've got this great relationship where we can have quite an open dialogue. And he said, look, open up the floor. If people have got questions to me, let's do it, Pete. So if you've got questions about the interest accounts that BlockFi are running and you want them answered by Zach, feel free to email me. Every question sent to me will be put to him. We'll get on a mic next week and record it and stick it out on SoundCloud. You know my email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Reach out to me there. Send me all your questions. And yeah, we'll record this next week. And also, a last shout out to my new sponsor, Flubit. Not sure if you checked them out yet. You really should. I've actually used them a couple of times now since they've become a sponsor. Just because of mainly this feature where you can compare with Amazon. You can go onto their website, you can do a search, and you can click show me items cheaper than Amazon, which is really cool and really useful. And also, they accept crypto, which is really useful. I mean, I paid with Bitcoin, but I know they accept Ether, Litecoin, and Mu. I don't know anything about Mu. It's not something I've ever used, but I use Bitcoin, so that was super cool. I ended up buying 5 copies of Andreas's The Internet of Money, and they've been delivered, so I'm going to give those out as prizes at some point next week. Keep an eye on my Twitter if you're interested in that. Definitely go and check them out. As I mentioned, they're basically like Amazon. They've got so many different things you can buy, but loads of the items they've got listed are cheaper than Amazon, and you can pay with your crypto. I can't say much better than that. So definitely go and check them out at flubit.com, which is FLUBIT.com. Good morning, Amin. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So I was up early this morning watching the football and I read a Decrypt article. And I've obviously been aware of you for some time, but it said you're in Venice and I was in Venice. So I messaged you.
Match made in heaven.
Yeah. Well, so normally I prepare about a day for an interview and I've done about 30 minutes. So mm-hmm. we're just going to have to roll with this. There'll be a bunch of things I don't know. So you're just going to have to bear with me.
It's cool. You caught me right when I was waking up. So
perfect. Cheers. Perfect. Okay. So can you give me the background, the story from how you went from, you know, got to consensus, but then ended up doing Spank Chain?
Yeah. So I was living on the balcony of a rationalist house in Berkeley. Paying way too much, and it was cold and sometimes it would rain on you, but I had like a sleeping bag. It was kind of nice, but then from there I learned about Ethereum and I read this blog post, Meditations on Moloch, and I thought Ethereum could be interesting for helping humans solve coordination problems in general. So I shipped off to Consensus, worked for Joe Lubin. I worked mostly on like micropayment infrastructure, state channels. I was working sort of on the energy project there. It was called Cotricity at the time. And then towards the end of my working there, I moved on out to LA to work on AdChain, which was the first TCR, token curated registry. And then I left Consensus and I started asking myself, you know, where is adoption going to happen first? Where is, you know, what's a good use case for these micropayment infrastructure that I've been working on? And I started looking at the adult entertainment industry and porn. And so we built the Chem site. We launched Spank Chain, did a token sale in November of 2017, raised about $6.5 million, hired an elite team, and we shipped the first payment channels on Ethereum. It's like Lightning. But that was back in April, and we've made a number of upgrades since then, working with Connext, one of our partners, and others, and are in integrating the payment channels into a myriad of Spank Chain products.
Right. And it's always porn that leads tech, right?
That's what they say. It's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Why do you think that is?
Well, for one, they'll try anything. they're highly experimental. And two, cryptocurrency is this sort of fringe culture And adult is sort of also this fringe culture. And so it's a lot easier for the two to see eye to eye. And the third is that in this particular case, the thing that cryptocurrency offers is, you know, way to store and transact, store money and transact without being censored and having your funds seized. And that's exactly what that industry needs, because the adult industry in particular is discriminated against at the hands of the financial institutions. They have their PayPal accounts shut down, Stripe won't process their payments, the bank close out their accounts, stuff like that happens all the time.
So just regular financial censorship.
Yeah. And so for the adult entertainment industry, there's a much larger impetus to move on to this new financial system, right? So like one of my theses was, you know, the people who are the most motivated to move to the new financial system are the ones most ostracized by the existing one.
Right. And so is SpankChain a company that's building products, or are you also building an infrastructure for the financial industry? Sorry, for the adult industry.
It's both. We have apps and services. So like we have our own CAM site, but we're also building a payment processor that merchants can integrate. So this CAM site is called spank.live. You can go to it. It's in beta. The payment processor is not out yet, but that's what our primary focus is, and that's called Spank Pay. And so that you can think of that as like a PayPal for porn. And we'll be building SDKs for other services as we go. Like we can take the video component of, you know, Spank Live, put it into an SDK, and allow anybody who's building their own application to use it.
Right. Okay. So I read a quote by your head of outreach, Ali Evenox, and she said, "You have these rich bankers closing performers' accounts, and then going home and jerking off to the women whose accounts they've just closed." I thought it was quite an interesting quote, right? Because I guess the adult industry is something which probably almost everybody uses in private, and then publicly lots of people take a moral judgment against.
Yeah. I stand by Ali's quote. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And she's completely right. We're in this phase. I think it's personally a tipping point where 70% of people watch porn, but we all act like nobody does it. And
70% of adults?
70% of adults.
Right.
Yes. And that number has only been growing. And like the biggest resistance to the widespread acknowledgement of the adult entertainment industry as a part of our lives comes from like the evangelical right. And the number of atheists is also going up quite significantly every year. And so you have this like beautiful set of conditions that in my mind will result in the next 5 to 10 years, like the stigma against the adult entertainment industry being eroded significantly.
So is there still, or why do you think there is such a huge stigma around porn, and what do you think would change it?
I mean, there's always been a stigma against it in some sense. It's just that the reach of that stigma has been pulled back over time. So like, let me give an example. I was reading about early days of Playboy, and Hugh Hefner, you know, putting titties, bare breasts on a magazine was like a big deal in the 1950s, right? That was like, ooh, this is weird, right? And the post office refused to carry his magazines and refused to give him as much of a comparable rate to everybody else who was distributing magazines. And he sued them and won. He won $1 million in like today's value of money. It was $100,000 back then. But that just goes to show that, you know, it's sort of, you take the starting point of this and it's like, we haven't been distributing pornographic media. And then you start and you put titties on, you know, magazines, and they're like, that's the beginning. And then now we're here. And so it's like every year that every generation pushes the boundary a little bit further.
Right. But also at the same time, it can get pretty extreme on times online. Like, is there a limit to what people should see as socially acceptable?
I don't know that there's a limit that you'd ever want to die by.
Right.
Because what we think is weird, the next generation might pick up and think is fine. And we should be prepared for our social fabric to evolve as our society does and as our technology moves us in that direction.
All right. Well, let's get into SpankChain itself.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the status of the project? How far have you got?
We have a small team. We launched the campsite last summer. It's still in beta. We're building the payment processor, talking to potential partners right now. We launched the Spank Bank, which is our algorithmic central bank. You can stake your Spank and it mints Booty, which is our stablecoin.
You read that, or you said that all was such a straight phase.
I've done this quite a few times.
Spank Bank, where you mint Booty coin. It's a stable coin,
yeah, and,
right?
And Booty is pegged, like, you know, pegging like a booty, like you peg the butthole, right? So it's pegged to a dollar. And then in the next version, in the next like year to 18 months, I plan to introduce a booty call, which is similar to a margin call, but it will be for, you know, keeping booty stable by using the Spank staked as collateral.
Right. So tell me how the yeah, I know, man. This is.
Can't wait to explain this to Congress.
Yeah. So tell me how the Spank Bank works then, because I tell you what, there was another thing recently. I said to somebody, there is no sense in any DApp or utility coin being anything but a stable coin.
Yeah, I agree.
And you figured that out now.
Yeah, we figured that out the hard way, because we had, you know, tens of thousands of payments on the campsite being processed, and being the earnings were all in Ether. And this was, you know, we launched with great fanfare at the midway through 2018, and everybody who held the ETH at that point lost a bunch of money. And so we realized that, you know, this is a UX problem. We need to have people want to earn and spend in a medium of exchange that is correlated with the stuff that they regularly spend money on.
Why do you think so many other apps and dApps and tokens won't be a stablecoin? Do you think it's just because they want the value of their token to grow and they're treating it like stock?
No, I mean, most people just raised money with bad plans, and right, they'll probably change those plans. Their plan was like, they saw somebody raise money with a token model that was, we'll earn and, you know, we'll have this two-sided network and the medium exchange will be our token and therefore it will be valuable, which is stupid. And many people pointed out it was stupid, but the wave of people pointing out it was stupid did not stop them from raising money. So the feedback loop continued and grew. And so, you know, until people actually try to use that in production and realize it's dumb, they'll have to figure something else out.
Right. Okay. So I'm guessing the reason you didn't work and adopt a different stable coin is because none of them are really truly censorship resistant, right? You see the terms and conditions for the various stable coins that have been released, and they all have something in there about the ability to block and censor payments.
Yeah. So we could use DAI, and I would prefer DAI over anything else.
Yeah.
Just because we have enough trouble with banks. If, you know, it's easy for them to flip a switch and make our money worthless, then I'm never going to hold it. Whereas with DAI, it is legitimately decentralized. Mm-hmm. And I know that I can go, you know, I can't go get Ether, but I can sell it to somebody. And if, you know, the value of the underlying collateral ever drops enough, then there will be a way for me to buy it with DAI and auction. So, yeah, I'm like, we, you know, at some point held, SpankChain held 1% of all the DAI. It's like something like $600,000 we cashed out when the markets were crashing. And so we could use DAI in our system as well. We haven't yet, just because of like complexity of having to explain it to people, like, what is this new other token? And so it's a little bit easier to be, you know, here's Booty. This is like what we mint and operate. And it's basically used as our sort of internal accounting system. And also I think stable coins will get easier to build. Like the whole Maker model, like one of the things that they have is that they hilariously and ingeniously name their variables totally, you know, nobody understands anything about their smart contracts because it's so hard to read, sort of like Da Vinci, you know, encoding his scriptures and whatever. But eventually it'll get copied. And I think that the cost of operating your own central bank-like thing as a community will drop. And we'll see, you know, thousands of these spring up that are more on the spectrum of being like harder money. Bitcoin is, you know, maybe the hardest money. And then you have central banks that can arbitrarily change the rules as like the softer money. And then you might have something where like you have a central bank, but its operation is, you know, follows some rules that it encodes on a smart contract. And so you have a credible belief that it won't break them, you know, in certain ways. And that might be better. And it might also, if the benefits of that, the operation of that piece of financial infrastructure benefit the community that it's intended to serve, then I think that's better for all communities that wish to operate their own financial infrastructure for their own gain.
Right. Okay. So how does the bank work, and how are booty coins minted?
Mm-hmm. So we have fees that we collect. So we take like 5% on the CAM site right now. So we burn those fees, and the Spank Bank targets booty generation of 20 times the total amount in fees that were burned. So let's say we collect $20,000, you know, in fees. Well, 5% of that's $1,000, right? So we burn $1,000, and the Spank Bank targets a total booty supply of 20 times that. So then there would be 20,000 booty that should be in existence. And if, let's say there was 20,000 booty, let's say we're at equilibrium and 1,000 gets burned, well, then now we're at 19. And so then 1,000 will get regenerated and then distributed to all the Spank stakers.
Right. Okay. So you use the booty as the tip for the CAM models. Mm-hmm.
Don't have to. Like, we could use something else.
Of course.
And then,
I mean, you could use ETH or Bitcoin.
We were using ETH. Happy to use Bitcoin. It's just hard. Like, I'd have to build a whole other wallet and the thing. And like, okay, now you have two different types of keys that you have to think about. but like, I'd love to see like a wrap Bitcoin. Or something come to Ethereum and then make it really easy for me to integrate that with my existing wallet.
There is a wrapped Bitcoin now.
There is. I haven't integrated it yet, but I'm still looking into it. I'm a little uncertain about the federated models.
There was interesting. Another quote I took out was from Molly Meows.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, even accepting Bitcoin for her services, a popular choice among sex workers, required going through exchanges such as Coinbase, themselves beholden to old school regulations. So actually the offboarding back to fiat is still difficult with Bitcoin.
It's difficult with everything. Like, Ether is no exception to that rule. We discourage Coinbase for performers and users, mostly for performers, because Coinbase explicitly in their terms of service says you cannot use this for adult entertainment adjacent stuff. So we recommend Gemini and others.
Right, okay. I don't understand the adult industry that much at all. And it's definitely out here in the US a bigger industry than where I am in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit wilder, a little bit freer. So can you tell me some of the kind of myths about the adult industry that circulate?
I'd say the biggest one is that they're dirty. People think that, you know, because you're in porn, because you're having sex with somebody, you know, three times a week, maybe more for your job, maybe multiple people, that you're unclean, or, and specifically, I mean, at a higher risk of sexually transmitted diseases. And I think that's completely untrue, because everybody in porn who performs gets tested every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. It's all of the normies, as they say, right? We call the no coiners normies in this community. But if you're an adult performer, you call, you know, the less sexually gifted normies. They're worried about catching things from normies who then don't protect and, you know, fuck around. So
are there any kind of risks for models going into the industry? Can it be a gateway to, you know, potentially even prostitution or things like that?
Yeah. I mean, personally, my view on prostitution is that it should be decriminalized. But I think,
yeah, I'm not saying that with any kind of judgment on prostitution, but sure, there are higher risks, I guess.
Yeah. And in one case you have, performers who, you know, they want to go like shoot a scene. They want it to boost their, you know, presence, and some agencies, you know, cut bad deals where they either use financial pressure to get a performer to sign a contract that is disadvantageous for them, or they encourage them to shoot scenes where it's like a dude with a camcorder in a hotel, and you know, this guy doesn't have a page, or you know, it's not legit. And if they were escorting, they would be making 3 to 5 times as much money, but because it's seen as a shoot, it's they make way less. And so it's unfair even from an economic standpoint, let alone the security risks. Thankfully, you have people like one of my lawyers, Al, who just sued that guy and won for, you know, representing a number of the performers that he was abusing.
Wow. Okay. And so I checked out the website, the application to become a cam girl. I guess I could have become a cam boy if I wanted.
Yeah.
But it's from 18 years of age.
Pretty inclusive.
You're pretty inclusive. Yeah. I'm not sure I'll try. I don't think anyone would pay.
I'll tip
for
you.
Me. No. You know, I would tip you not to see me with my clothes.
I'll tip you with that money too.
So, but it's from 18 years of age, right? And you know, it's obviously a legal age of consent. So I've got a son who's just about turned 15, and he still seems very young. So I still consider 18 pretty young. Are there any kind of protections you put in place or any processes you put in place for people who come on board, any kind of things to help them deal with potential, I don't know. Because it could be quite a scary industry to move into.
Yeah, and camming is like the safest possible version of that you could do. It's like you're in your house. Like, I mean, there are some instances where, you know, camming is done in studios, and in the worst case it's like a mafia boss owns it or something, right? But in the happier case, it's like you with your laptop and your decorated, you know, room in your house, and you stream for a bit and people cheer you on, and it's fun. So you know, I guess I'm less concerned with that than like more hardcore stuff, which can be a little bit more intimidating. You go into a room, there's, you know, 5-8 people there watching you have sex, right? And that's your job, and you go and you perform and you do it for several hours. On the user side, it's interesting that, you know, you bring this up, especially being from UK, because in the UK...
Yeah, I know what you're going to say.
I know, you know. Well, they had an ID card that you now have to like buy in a store in order to verify that you are above 18 and you can watch porn. And these are the kinds of rules that get made when the old people still make the rules. But as they die and the people who grew up with this stuff and aren't terrified by it, you know, treat this as normal, start making the rules, we're going to see the people look at that and be like, this is completely insane.
Well, people don't want to be tagged and ID'd as, you know, as a
right.
porn user.
And especially, so it's not that, you know, so much that porn is a gateway drug. It's actually, porn is the gateway for the governments of the world to stamp out your freedom on the internet. Because nobody will come and defend their right to watch porn because it has the social stigma attached to it. So if you want to defend the internet, suddenly the government has put you in a position where they're like, oh, you want to defend sex traffickers. That's what you want to do by keeping this site up. And it's really hard to counter that narrative, because it's really easy to just pile on against sex traffickers, even though it's a totally uninformed position. So, you know, we all basically, if we want to defend internet freedoms, we have to start, you know, the adult industry for us, for people, you know, in Bitcoin who value freedom, it should be the place where we start to take a stance against the government encroaching on our rights online.
So do you as SpankChain have any campaigns that you're working on with this?
We have made a number of donations to people who were, you know, supporting sex workers and combating FOSTA and SESTA. I can't remember them all, but something, you know, $25,000-$50,000 range of donations that we've made. We can't do as much as I wanted to do when, you know, we all had way more money last year. We have to be a little bit more focused on building a sustainable business. And I hope that as we continue, I mean, one of the things we've done is within like the Ethereum community, we've been embraced. At first, everybody thought we were weird. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, I don't know, these SpankChain guys, it's a porn thing, are we gonna... But then I think our message came through, which was like, you know, this is actually a group of people who really need what it is that our community is offering, and we shouldn't turn them away. And so I think that, you know, our community has seen that, and I know that they value it a lot. And so I hope that we can continue to bring these two communities together in order to bring the benefits of crypto to performers, and also have performers and models and sex workers who could actually benefit from this, like, you know, bring adoption to our industry.
You did offer your bounties, didn't you? Your $25,000 bounties. And that was kind of interesting. But I didn't know. See, this is where I haven't had much time to prepare. I didn't know about this Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah, FOSTA. So it stands for Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act. And that's basically what Congress used. And this is like the only thing that everybody in Congress can agree on. It was like 97-2 in the Senate, right? It was like 500 plus to like one or three, I don't know, in the House. It's sort of crazy to think about that. So more or less, what it does is it removes, I forget what exact act it is, but it removes the liability protection for website operators for user-generated content. So it normally, or how it was that you were not liable as a site operator for something that somebody posted on your site. Right, if you owned Reddit, you weren't liable, Craigslist, and so forth. And what we see as a response to this, this was passed into law last year. What we've seen as a response is Reddit took down, you know, their personal section. Craigslist took down their personal section. Tumblr banned porn, like, and no action has actually been taken. So, like, the founders of Backpage, which was the largest online escorting site in the U.S. were, you know, raided and imprisoned, but it wasn't actually anything to do with sex trafficking. It was like money laundering and other things, right? But it just, you know, they use these things as the scapegoat. So EFF, Electronic Frontier Foundation, I think. Yeah, they're actually suing over this. They're suing Congress. They're saying that this is unconstitutional. So if you would like to, you know, get involved, that's like a good way to support the EFF. And maybe we should ICO the lawsuit.
Okay.
Well, make Congress pay damages.
So you were offering bounties of $25,000 for catching politicians caught sleeping with sex workers who supported.
So we briefly offered $25,000 bounties for information from sex workers who could provide, you know, evidence that politicians who did vote yes on those bills were using sex traffickers. Because, I mean, do the math, right? Like, how many of them do you actually think have never, you know, slept with an escort? Like, it seems vanishingly low. And given that almost all of them, like, given that it was basically unanimous, it means that the probability that somebody voted yes on it and also has done this is very high. And this brings me back to Ali's point, right? Where it's like these guys are shutting down performers' accounts and then, you know, going home and jacking off to them. And it's like exactly the same with the wankers. And I have trouble using this pejoratively because, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a wanker. But these guys, they have, you know, taking the position that this should, you know, to discriminate even further, using the adult industry as a scapegoat, rallying everybody against sex trafficking that isn't going to be solved by this. It's actually going to get made worse because people are going to end up back on the streets where it's less safe. In order, you know, and then what? They're going to go home and still, like,
be a hypocrite,
like, watch porn and like sleep with sex workers, and like that's what they do.
Did you pay any bounties out?
We did not. We quickly decided to stop doing that and then use the money more productively to donate it towards the advocacy organizations.
All right, so let's talk a bit more about Spank Chain and the campsite. And yeah,
maybe one day we'll go back to it when we're a bit bigger.
Yeah. So let's talk about the benefits, because there is a natural fit between crypto and what you're doing. So there's no chargebacks. So how big a problem is chargebacks for adult performers?
It's a pretty big problem. I mean, it's classified as high risk, and all the payment processors that serve them charge, you know, 10% or so, which is like three times as much. 10 is like a decent rate. It goes up to 15. But that's just for, you know, stuff that everybody else takes for granted. Everybody else expects, you know, 3% as sort of the payment processing rate. But because there's more chargebacks in adult, somebody steals a credit card, goes on it, or it's, you know, somebody's Their wife finds out and they say, it wasn't me, it was stolen. Right. That's what the adult industry has to deal with. And because the double spend window of the legacy financial system is like 30 to 90 days and not like 10 minutes like in Bitcoin, then you have this possibility. Being able to use something like payment channels or even just accepting crypto means that that those kinds of chargebacks are impossible and that the transaction fees can be way lower because you don't need a fraud department.
Right, okay. I think tied with that, you've also got anonymity for customers, because one of the things about paying for porn is that you know, if you are using a credit card, you have to create an account, mm-hmm. you've got your details. And I guess there's also the risk of the hacks. I can't remember, there was the dating site, Ashley Madison that got hacked.
Yeah, that's right.
And everybody who was a user was publicly outed on a website as being right. the user of a cheating website. So I guess that's the anonymity which comes for customers is another great benefit.
Yeah. So if you want today, you sign up for your Spank Live account, you don't actually need to use an email address or password. You can use a key as your authentication mechanism. And you know, we're going to add the username and password option because there's many people who are, you know, they just want to watch. They don't care as much. But if you do, then I don't think there's a whole lot that beats being able to sign in with a key, not needing a username attached to it, not needing your bank attached to it, because as long as, you know, you put the money in the account, it came from somewhere, it could come from an exchange, a Tumblr, you can pay with Zcash, you know, that's pretty good.
And then in terms of the adult entertainers, you only take 5% of fees. I saw on your website that they can be charged up to 50%.
Yeah, most campsites charge 50% wow. right now. We charge a lot less.
Does that mean you're getting quite a lot of adoption?
It means that we're well positioned for growth, but it also means, you know, for us, like the big problem after we solved, you know, instant payments with the payment channels and adding the stablecoin to get that, our biggest problem is KYC, right? Like 99% of the people who come don't have crypto already, because that's the state of the world that we live in. So we're leaving a lot of money on the table by, you know, excluding them. Because for them, the story is, I show up, okay, I want this. You know, this is a good way to support the performers that I want. You know, they're going to get way more of it than if I was going to tip them on some other site. But now I can't because I don't have crypto. Okay, so I go to Coinbase, I have to upload an ID, I have to connect my bank. Okay, no, I don't really feel like doing this. Thank you. Now, maybe for them, the better alternative is invite them in, have them learn over time, and then, you know, pass savings on to them. Like if you can save 10% by coming in if you don't use a credit card. And then after a while, they've gotten more used to it. They see people talking about it. That's the sort of gateway I see.
So can somebody signing up use their credit card on your site to buy booty coins?
Soon.
Okay. So you've almost got an exchange option for them, right?
Yeah.
But aren't you going to have your then own KYC demands?
So there's ways around it. The way we're going to use is basically when you buy with credit card, it'll be as if you're buying into a normal campsite. You're not getting the ERC-20 booty. You're getting like some database entry. And then it's on us to actually abstract all of this away at the UI level. So whether you're buying in with, you know, credit card and getting database booty, D-booty, as I like to call it, or if you're buying in with crypto and getting a real ERC-20 token, then it looks the same.
I guess sometimes centralized components like that aren't bad, right?
I mean, like, look at Coinbase, right? Like, what is Coinbase? It's a bunch of wallets and a UI. And like what they've done, the hard parts of what they've done is security and paperwork. Everything else is, you know, it's pretty straightforward.
Well, Brian Armstrong admitted that himself. And I can't remember the quote, but he talked about that a lot of the business that will be built will be centralized companies built upon decentralized technology.
Yeah.
So that I guess there's only certain aspects that you need for decentralization, which is for censorship resistant money, that right. component.
Yeah.
What's the offboarding process for entertainers to receive their money?
Yeah, so they get it in the wallet in booty, and then they click a button and it sends them Ether equivalent. We have ETH and booty reserves on chain on our payment channel contract, so it makes administrating it a little bit easier because we can do an on-chain exchange as part of a withdrawal.
Okay, so they still have to use an exchange, though,
Well, it's like a you know, they're getting it in a channel, and so then they just cash out of the channel in Ether. And like some of them might even trust us and be like, you know, it's fine if you just hold on to this, you know, credit for me, this booty. It's essentially them giving us a short-term loan, right? And then like at the time that they want, then they click the button, they get Ether, and what they do is they go to an exchange. We recommend Gemini, and then they cash out to their bank or spend it.
Why is it you recommend it? Gemini?
Just, it's, you know, one of the more well-known ones that is not Coinbase. Like for all of Gemini's, like, we need regulations and sort of silly.
That's what I was thinking.
Signaling, that's... right? It's like, well, they don't have it explicitly against their terms of conditions to, you know, affiliate with the adult industry.
So you really don't like Coinbase?
I love Coinbase. I think it's great. I can't recommend it for anybody in the adult entertainment industry.
Right? Yeah, okay.
I think that the hacking team stuff was unfortunate, but I think they did the right response, stuff like that. Right,
okay. So you also, as an entertainer, you can't have your account closed?
You can have your account closed. We follow laws, right? We have terms and conditions. We are about as lax as it gets in terms of like most of the rules on like content come from payment processors. Like they don't want to process payments for things like blood. Like if you're on your period, you can't really perform because that content cannot be displayed anywhere, even if there's people who are into it, which many are. Urine and feces are also there, and it's not something I'm personally interested in, but I can understand that there are people who are, and the rules against that are from payment processors. So like, you know, if you come in with crypto, you can get all of that without any sort of rules. We're not going to block you for showing that content. But at the same time, you know, if you make an account and somebody underage comes on and streams and it's you're pretending that that's you, that's something that we have to take quite seriously, and we'll have to shut down the account.
Right? So you have to take, there's a lot of responsibility that you have to take seriously what you're doing because you are trying to build a business.
Right. We are trying to build a business. We operate compliantly in all the states in which we operate.
Have you had any kind of legal pressure at all?
Not yet. We've been pretty careful.
Okay. In terms of the structure of the company, mm-hmm. it seems to be that you're run by people who understand the industry.
I'd say we understand, or you know, are trying to learn more every day.
Okay, so what are your biggest challenges you're facing?
I think the biggest challenges will be just unifying our sort of two accounting systems. It's going to take work, and then you know, having a nice interface on top, and then bringing, so that's internally, that's like for our own products first, and then externally it's convincing merchants in the crypto winter that they will see, you know, more payments and save money on the crypto payments that they get, and that they should integrate with our payment system.
How much did the bear market affect you guys?
I think it affects us in terms of sentiment and excitement. For example, building, you know, really technologically advanced systems to help with marketing to the Ethereum community was like great when Ether was at $1,000. It was a much more viable strategy than it is now. So how it has affected us is, you know, needing to focus more on beautiful fiat dollars. Because those, you know, at least they still have them, and then making it work with the stuff we have.
So I've got a couple questions to finish out on. Okay, you won an award at the Adult Video Awards, right? AVNs? Best app?
That's actually incorrect.
Is it incorrect? But it's in the articles.
I know. so we were nominated for a number of awards at AVN.
Yeah.
We didn't win any.
Oh.
But we did win DApp of the Year at DevCon. So the part of that article that is correct is that we did win the award. Just wasn't at AVN.
So did you go to AVN?
Yeah, we went to AVN this year and last year.
What's it like?
It's a lot of fun. It's what you might expect when you know, basically all of the porn stars on Earth get together and have a party.
All right, so the last thing I want to ask you about is the tech. So mm-hmm. you're doing some quite innovative stuff with state channels, right?
Yeah.
It's way over my head. Can you just talk me through it?
Well, it's kind of like the Lightning Network, but if, you know, the Lightning Network is a fast calculator built on a slow calculator, state channels are fast computers built on a slow computer. So the thing about state channels is, like, you can do anything on it that you could do on a smart contract, you know, as you could do on Ethereum, not just payments, but payments are a really great use case. And so the way to build payments on state channels is to implement the logic of a state channel where the state is the balances of the two parties and the state transition is that one can pay the other. Right. So we did that. We've done that a couple times. So we built the first payment channel system in April that was like unidirectional Ether only. And then we upgraded it. And so now we have like a non-custodial payment system. So you open up a bidirectional channel with a hub. And so you and the hub both can have money in it. You can both send money back and forth. So that means you can send in the channel. You can also receive in the channel. And then you can open up threads, which, or, you know, some people call them virtual channels, which are unidirectional and can be opened directly with a counterparty that also has a connection to that hub. So if you don't have a connection with somebody, it's fine. You can still pay them through the system.
Are you building this yourself, or are you building on
we
top
already
of
built
other
this? So we built this in collaboration with Kinext, okay. Who's now marketing the technology to the rest of the Ethereum ecosystem. When we took an equity position in Kinext, as part of the deal, and and now we're still collaborating with the counterfactual guys. They're a little bit behind in terms of their client implementation, but the idea is to take our use case to drive their development of the more abstract, more general purpose version of this, because ultimately, you know, we should be able to use the same smart contract base because they're building very, very generalized state channels, which means that it should be able to do anything, our use case included.
Much of a headache getting it in place?
I think building for like a specific use case makes a lot of sense. Like, you wouldn't have wanted to build Ethereum before you built Bitcoin. That would have made no sense. Mm-hmm. But building Bitcoin helps you understand, like, well, let's rewind a bit. Ethereum was invented by Vitalik when he went around to all the people who were trying to build colored coins and whatnot and wanted some specific change in Bitcoin, but needed to fork the protocol in order to add that opcode in or whatever. And then he realized, oh, what if we made a thing that could, you know, had a generalized system of opcodes that could process anything? And that's what inspired Ethereum to be built. So I think state channels, you could see the same contract core being used for anything from games to gambling to payments to, I don't know, data storage, even, and like correlating those two. Like, you know, you promise that you'll lock up some, or, you know, store some data for me, and then I give you a micropayment every month, so long as you can prove you still have it.
All right, so what do you got coming up? What should we keep an eye out for on Spank Chain?
Keep an eye out for merchant adoption. Spank Chain growing up, becoming a real business, getting partnerships, making deals. Keep an eye out for the CAM site dropping its beta, expanding internationally, adding private shows and adding fiat payments. And keep an eye out for a clip site that we have on the way after that, so that you can upload videos and sell them for crypto.
All right, cool, man. Okay, so how do people stay in touch? Who do you want to hear from?
Yeah, sure. Feel free to reach out. I'm on Twitter at AminSoul. We're at SpankChain also. Join our Discord. We have a vibrant community of performers and crypto enthusiasts that are all teaching each other about our communities.
Brilliant. Look, thanks for doing this at such short notice.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right.
Okay, so how was that? What did you make of those two interviews? As I said, I'm not promoting Spank Chain, and I expect people will say I'm trying to legitimize a business. I'm going to stay neutral on this. I don't know fully whether or not they will be able to create a legal, viable, and ethical long-term business, but I do believe Amin has honest intentions of helping sex workers, And yeah, I'm happy to discuss this, so feel free to reach out to me. I really think some of the issues here faced by sex workers need considering. I personally can't understand the deplatforming and financial censorship here for people working in a legal industry. By financially censoring them or making things difficult, I think the only impact is on the sex workers themselves and is only negative. It was really interesting to learn about how little regulation there is in the industry and the potential for exploitation and abuse of adult entertainers. I don't think it's healthy with this industry to have so much stigma and for people not to talk about it, as such a high percentage of the population do consume pornography. It is a reality. It is there. If we contribute towards this industry, I think we have a responsibility to the workers to protect them. Like in any other industry, I don't see any kind of tiered protection systems in place here. Everyone is the same. They are working in a legal industry and these people deserve protection. So that's my view. You might disagree. If you do, feel free to reach out to me and tell me. I personally enjoy doing the interviews. I definitely want to look into this more and we'll be covering this again in the future. Also, thank you to everyone who supports the show. I'm not going to do my regular blah, blah, blah. Look, if you want to support the show, just head over to my website. It's whatbitcoindid.com. Click on the support section. There's a whole bunch of stuff there that will tell you what you can do. And as I said in the intro, Lightning Week starts next week. Whole bunch of interviews starting to come out about that. So that's exciting. You know, if you want to speak to me, my email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. And I look forward to hearing from you.